Welcome to Akatra Dialogue, a journey through timeless literature. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Akatra AI. Hello and welcome. Today we're taking a deep dive into a really incredibly powerful novel. It's Ruta Pratam's Pinjar, which translates to The Skeleton. And it's not just a, you know, a historical piece. It feels timeless, really digging into identity, humanity, and what it means to survive immense trauma.
It really is. It's a journey, isn't it? Right into the core of being human when, well, everything that anchors you is just violently ripped away. Pratam's voice, it's something else.
Absolutely revolutionary. Ruta Pratam, 1919 to 2005, a major figure in Punjabi and Hindi literature. First woman to get the Sahitya Akademi Award, which is significant in itself.
It's a huge deal, yeah.
And her writing, just raw emotional power. She wasn't afraid to challenge social norms, really push boundaries. Many people know her from her poem, Ajay Akanwari Shanu, that iconic cry of anguish.
Yes, captures the era's pain so acutely.
And Pinjar, well, it came out in 1950, just 3 years after the partition of India and Pakistan in 47. Mm. That closeness to the event is key. You feel it on every page.
You really do.
It makes it such a defining work of partition literature, but also, you know, Indian feminist writing. It looks unflinchingly at sexual violence, at social abandonment.
Yeah.
Things that weren't often discussed so openly then.
That immediacy, it hits you. It feels less like looking back at history and more like touching a raw nerve. And as you said, it's more than just the events. It's a meditation on violence itself.
Right.
Pratam does this incredible thing, takes one person's life, Puro's life, and makes it a lens for this vast national tragedy. You see a collective catastrophe mirrored in the personal. It forces you to think, how does that even happen?
It's a powerful setup. Yeah. A specific story, but with such universal resonance.
So the story starts somewhere seemingly peaceful, almost idyllic, right? Pre-partition Punjab, this village called Shadowani. And we meet Puro. She's young, Hindu, full of life, dreaming about her future, her upcoming wedding to Ramshan from another village, Radhaval. It's all warmth, family, community, serene almost.
That picture of innocence, just before everything changes. But as you hinted, that peace is fragile.
Extremely fragile. It's shattered, just like that. Puro is abducted. The man is Rashid, a young Muslim man from the village.
And it's not random, is it? That's what's so chilling.
No, absolutely not. It's calculated. It's revenge. Turns out, generations back, Puro's uncle had abducted Rashid's sister. So this is historical grievance erupting into present-day cruelty. The past literally reaches out and grabs her.
Okay, let's unpack this a bit. That cycle of revenge, it's one of the first really gut-wrenching things the novel throws at you, isn't it?
Definitely.
How these old wounds just fester and then justify horrific acts now, often against people who had nothing to do with the original wrong. And it immediately shows you the terrible position of women caught in these communal conflicts.
Exactly. Pawns in games of male honor and hatred.
And then comes the part that, for me, is almost harder to comprehend than the abduction itself. Puro manages to escape Rashid.
A moment of hope, you think?
Right. You think, okay, she's free, she'll go home. But Rome parents, they reject her. Utterly. They say she's polluted.
A stain on their honor.
Yes. They basically tell her she's dead to them. That rejection, that specific moment, Pratam presents it as a deeper violence than the abduction. It destroys her identity. That's when Puro becomes the Pinjar, the skeleton.
It's haunting. The father's words. Something like, you died to us the day you were taken. The living don't keep company with the dead. Go back.
Just brutal. It's not just rejection, it's erasure.
It perfectly captures what you called the tyranny of societal honor. Those patriarchal codes, especially around female purity, they could be more destructive, more final than the initial violence.
Yeah, the very family that should have been her refuge becomes another source of oppression. It really makes you ask, if your own people discard you for something you couldn't control, where on earth do you belong?
A devastating question. And it shows how conflict uses women's bodies, their fates, as symbols, stripping them of their own humanity.
So she's defeated, empty, there's nowhere else. She has to go back to Rashid.
Yes. And then she's given a new name, Hamida, formally converted to Islam. Her life shifts completely.
How does Pratam describe her existence then? It's like, Hamida.
It's described as, well, mechanical, numb. She calls herself a specter in her own life. She does the duties, wife, mother to her son, Javed, but emotionally, she's detached. A shell.
Wow.
The change from Puro to Hamida isn't just a name. It symbolizes her soul being stripped, leaving just this functioning body. There's that line, her internal thought. This body is just a skeleton, a cage of bones I am forced to carry. My soul, my name, my life. That was Puro, and Puro is gone.
That skeleton image is just so central, isn't it? It permeates everything. But here's where it gets really interesting, I think. Rashid's character, he's not painted as a simple monster.
Not at all. He's complex. He starts as this abductor driven by this, you know, idea of family revenge, but he changes. Preetam shows him becoming guilt-ridden, tormented, but also protective of her in his own silent way.
How so?
He treats her with this kind of resigned care. It's like he constantly recognizes the life he destroyed. He suffers too in his own way. It doesn't excuse anything, of course, but it adds this layer of human complexity. They're bound together by his crime and her circumstances.
So this whole section really digs into identity and belonging, doesn't it? Her forced conversion, being displaced, it raises huge questions like, is your identity fixed? Or can circumstances just change it, erase it, even?
Fundamental questions. And what's amazing is, like you said, society sees her as this pinjar, this skeleton. But the trauma doesn't make her better, not in the way you might expect.
Right.
Instead, something else emerges, a kind of quiet strength, a subtle form of agency and resistance. Her suffering seems to give her this profound empathy for other women who are suffering.
Like the madwoman she encounters.
Exactly. The madwoman, the destitute girl. She finds a purpose in trying to ease their pain. It's like she transforms from just a victim into this force of empathy.
It's not a loud rebellion, is it? It's internal. Finding her humanity, not by trying to grab back the past, but by connecting with others in their present pain. A quiet defiance of being just a victim.
Precisely. Agency born from shared suffering, building new connections that go beyond family or religion. A different kind of belonging, maybe?
And then the story leaps forward to 1947. The partition is announced, and the world just erupts into communal violence.
Yeah, suddenly the chaos Puro has carried inside her for years is mirrored everywhere outside. There's this grim sense of understanding, almost. The personal trauma and the national tragedy just fuse.
A terrifying reflection.
And amidst all this, she discovers something that brings her past crashing back. Laho, the younger sister of Ramshan, her original fiancé, has been abducted in the riots. And Puro, seeing Lotto, seeing maybe a reflection of her own innocent past self, feels this overwhelming empathy. She risks her own safety to find Lotto and give her shelter.
If we connect this to the bigger picture again, it's such a powerful illustration of how women get dehumanized in these conflicts, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Their bodies become like territory, their lives reduced to symbols of someone else's honor or shame. Preetam really hammers home that tragic point. You remember that line, woman's honor is not her own. It belongs to everyone except herself.
That line cuts deep. It shows the terrible irony trying to protect or reclaim honor often ends up stripping women of their actual dignity and choice.
So this sets up the climax. Ramshan, her former fiance, he's now volunteering, trying to recover abducted women. He comes to Rashid's village.
Finds Laho there under Puro's protection. And then he sees Puro after all those years.
What does he offer?
He offers her a chance to return, to go back to India, to her own people. It's the life she lost, seemingly being offered back to her.
The ultimate test, her moment of reckoning.
Completely. She's standing there, looking at Ramshant, the ghost of her past, looking at Lajo, the mirror of her past suffering, looking at her son, Jive, the reality of her present, and looking at Rashid, her complicated, maybe even necessary companion.
An impossible choice, past, present. Where does she belong now? What path does she take?
She refuses Ramshan's offer.
She refuses.
Yes. And her reason. It's profound. It comes from everything she's endured. She basically says, take Lajo. Her home is waiting for her. But where is my home? There are thousands like me here, thousands like her on your side. Which country belongs to us? I belong here now with them.
Wow. So what does that mean? Her final act. It's redefining everything, isn't it? Home, belonging.
Exactly. It's not about nation or religion or even her birth family anymore. She chooses solidarity based on shared experience, shared suffering. Belonging with the dispossessed, the ones cast out just like she was.
It's an incredible statement about humanity transcending those dividing lines, or religion, borders. Her choice is pure empathy. She elevates herself from just being a victim to this symbol of resilience, of choosing connection over division.
A solidarity born of pain, chosen over an identity that just doesn't fit anymore. It really challenges you, where do you belong when everything else is broken?
So Pinjar leaves you with these incredibly powerful takeaways. The way women are dehumanized, the tyranny of honor, how fragile identity can be, what home truly means, and this capacity for empathy to cross any divide. Preetam's writing style, too. That's so effective. Minimalist, almost elegiac, right?
Very much so. It focuses on the psychological impact, not graphic detail. and the symbolism is woven in so well.
Like the Pinjar itself, the land, that closed door of her father's house.
They're like thematic anchors, powerful, but never feeling forced.
The emotional impact is just huge. We feel such empathy for Piro, sorrow for all the unnamed women like her, but also this real awe at her quiet strength. What stays with you most after reading it?
For me, it's maybe a deeper sense of how arbitrary all these social categories are. Religion, nation, they just crumble under the weight of shared human suffering. It definitely gives you more empathy for anyone displaced, anyone who's lost their anchor.
Yeah.
And it challenges those easy ideas of heroism. Real strength here isn't fighting back in a conventional way. It's enduring. It's choosing compassion when you have seemingly nothing left.
And sadly, it still feels so relevant. You see echoes everywhere, sexual violence and conflict, the human cross to political divisions.
Tragically relevant. It forces you to see that while times change, these fundamental experiences, loss, resilience, searching for belonging, they're constant. Humanity sometimes shows its deepest strength in the worst circumstances.
Pinjar is more than a historical account. It's a timeless inquiry into what it means to rebuild one's soul when everything has been stripped away.
And it reminds us that true strength lies not in reclaiming what was lost, but in forging a new path defined by empathy and an unyielding human spirit.
This conversation ends here. We'll meet again with another unique work of world literature. This audio summary is brought to you by Katra Foundation.